No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site for USA Today's and Sports Media Group, covering the Arizona Cardinals. Seth Cox is my co-host and your co-host as well. He's from RevengeTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site for the Arizona Cardinals, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. And this is episode 177, only we are... I think we have to stick a fork in them. I think it's not they haven't been pronounced dead, but they have the death sentence at this point. They are all but dead. The Cardinals lose 32-16 to the Los Angeles Rams at home in a game that, if you look at the statistics, they didn't play poorly overall, but nonetheless, it's another double-digit loss. We didn't get good Blaine Gabbert. We saw Blaine Gabbert. And yeah, the Cardinals are now 5-7. And anything short of a miracle will keep them. Well, anything short of a miracle, and they will not be going to the postseason. So let's kind of talk about that. That was everything on your side of the world, Seth, on things you're doing and in the podcast and the site. But what are your takeaways?
When you look at this week, it was just, I think it was kind of the culmination of the reality of the 2017 Arizona Cardinals. I think it was the reality of who Blaine Gabbert is as a quarterback. I think it was a reality of who the team is, that they're not good offensively, and that's not really hard to understand. I mean, a third-string quarterback, they went with, I guess you can call Kerwin Williams the third-string running back at this point. You know, we've talked about the offensive line ad nauseum. They actually had a nice game for a little bit. But overall, you just look at it and, you know, a bad offense, understandably, a lot of important pieces missing and a lot of important pieces not stepping up like expected. But then they can't overcome it because they have I would call it a very average, probably below, but at least a very average defense. And then they have just an atrocious special teams. So when you have bad, average, and really bad, that is going to equal a poor record. And I think that just finally came to a head, because it wasn't that they were outplayed on Sunday. It was just that they were out-talented on Sunday on offense and defense, and then they were outplayed on special teams. But that's another story for probably another day.
And we might actually talk about that. But in the context of the all season, we're kind of caught up in the moment. We think, well, the expectations, even with all of everything I've talked about all the time, simply because I'm an optimist, is the Cardinals still give themselves a chance. But you pull back and look at big picture. They're a 5-7 team. They don't have their starting quarterback. They don't have their starting running back. They don't have their starting left tackle. They don't have their starting left guard. They lost their number one sack. They lost their sack leader from 2016. They lost one of their most productive defensive player a couple of weeks ago. If you were to do that for any team, what would you expect? And the fact that the Cardinals have kind of been in the mix is honestly a little bit impressive, just considering the amount of attrition. And injuries happen to every team, except for the Rams, apparently. And it's one of those years. It's just health has been the thing. But we're going to talk about in this edition, I believe this is episode 177. We're going to react more to the game and the things that came out of that. We're going to talk some more about Blaine Gabbert, because we can't get enough Blaine Gabbert. And you know, even Bruce Arians talked about some future there. We'll talk about their chance to go to the playoffs, what percentage chance we're going to give them. We'll look ahead to the Tennessee Titans, Cardinals' next opponent, another first-place team. Played first place team, the Jaguars, beat them. Played a first place team in the Rams, lost. Now they can play a first place team in the Titans. That's kind of an anomaly, but we're going to talk about that after as we get started. Before we get started, of course, I want to, of course, let you know about our friends over at Harrys.com. I've told you many, many, many times about the switch I made going to the blades there. I got started using Harry's blades, and it's super comfortable shave, super close. But this time of year, it's the holiday season. Let's talk about gifts. It's easy. It's actually a great gift you can give to your guy friends, and it's any guy in your life. It's practical. It's nice. And it's a product that lots of people are using. 3 million guys have switched over. You can choose the color that's right for him. Right now, for the holidays, we're offering custom and limited edition shaving sets to make perfect gifts. They start at $10. You get the German engineered 5-blade cartridges, super great shave. The foaming shave gel, it smells great. You can get winter chrome and emerald green handles if that's what you like. You can even personalize it if you'd like. They make great stocking stuffers, and we've got an offer for you guys, our listeners. Go to harrys.com/cred, and you're going to get $5 off your holiday order. It's only available for the holidays. It's coming to a close pretty soon. So this holiday, give Harry's and give handsome. Get your holiday shopping done early. Take advantage. Go head over to harrys.com/cred. Support the podcast by supporting our sponsors. Harry's one of our sponsors. Again, harrys.com/cred. So to get that limited edition holiday shave set while supplies last. Again, harrys.com/cred. And let's talk about the game. We're going to go ahead and get started. Blaine Gabbert, I guess we have to talk about him, talking about the game performance. We're going to talk about what this means looking forward, if expectations change. But Blaine Gabbert, not nearly as sharp. He wasn't horrible, ultimately. He bounced back. He threw a pair of interceptions in the first half, though. He was 11 of 14 for 109 yards and 3 touchdowns against Houston. He was 11 of 14 for 120 yards and a touchdown. And last week against the Jaguars, he wasn't as good this time in the first half. He ends up 18 for 32, 221 yards, a touchdown, and 2 picks, sacked 6 times. What did you take away from that? What are your thoughts on Blaine Gabbert and how he played against the Rams?
I thought he played like a backup. I mean, I'm going to beat this horse to death, but I think he is just continuing on the path of showing that he's not a bad quarterback. He's not LOL Blaine Gabbert anymore. He's just a average, probably below average NFL quarterback that needs to be kind of a career backup at this point. And that's okay. You saw two really, I won't say good, but really nice performances from him in Houston and then against the Jags, 1-1. And then, the wheels kind of came off, as you said. Just you saw some of those LOL Gabbert moments. You saw all of a sudden the hesitation to stay in the pocket and maybe get hit. You saw the inability to make throws when they were there. You talked about the first play of the game where he didn't set his feet and make a strong throw to a open J.J. Nelson. And then later in the game, he's, you know, trying to get the ball out too quick and overthrows a open Ricky Seals-Jones on a should be touchdown. And those are just plays again as a I'm going to say this and don't, you know, ever anybody get upset, but as a bad team, if you're going to beat a good team, those are plays you have to make. And again, it's not only Blaine Gabbert, but that's just the reality of it. When you are a team that's struggling to win games with your third string quarterback, you can't miss opportunities. And in this weekend's game, the missed opportunities, a lot of them fell at Blaine Gabbert's feet. In the same way that we talked about, Drew Stanton missed, what, 5 throws against the 4 throws against the Seattle Seahawks. And then on top of that, there were 5 drops. This week we had 2 drops for the Arizona Cardinal wide receivers. And Gabbert missed you know, three or four throws that he needed to make. And that's, again, that's what, when that happens, bad teams lose. And you compound that with the two blocked kicks on Sunday, and, you know, the 4 points that, so it's 20 to 32 instead of 16 to 32. But those are just little things that build to what was probably a closer game than the final score, but a game where you never really felt like the Cardinals had a chance.
And it started with the first throw of the game. You know, what we've seen in terms of his approach has been in the first half of both of each of the first two games, he was played it super safe. He was thrown in just to keep it in between the numbers, not taking shots down the field. Each week, he seems to be getting more comfortable with the offense and taking those shots. Not a single throw over 20 yards in the first game. You told me it was, he made three of such throws against the Jaguars, completed one of them. He jumped that up out of his 32 passes. He threw eight of them 20 yards down the field or more and completed only one of them. And so we're seeing him get a little more comfortable. As he gets a little more comfortable, you see some things that you're starting to see kind of some of the blemishes. And I find it interesting what Bruce Arians, the way he talks about him still is very much like he's talking about like a rookie or a second-year player. And this is a seven-year vet who's got some habits already there, got that athleticism. Basically, that first interception in the moment, it looked just – awful. Like, what are you trying to throw? When you look at it again, you realize, oh, he had JJ open. What, why did his throw so bad? And BA said right after the game, and he said it in on Monday, Blaine just for some reason threw on the run for when there was no need to. He was not being hurried. He had the guy open. They had the coverage they wanted. All he needed to do was set up, and he's got the arm to do it. Instead, he throws while he's running off a foot, and the throw looks horrifically bad and an easy interception. But BA talks about him, you know, if he's gifted with this athleticism and he's just not looking down the field. He's either relying too much on it, or he's, when he starts to scramble, he's looking to run and he's not, then there's plays down the field that he can make that he's not making. And those are things that you talk about, you know, kids coming out of college. And then when he runs, oh my heavens, we got the kind of the full Gabbert going. There were errant passes, there was the turnover, and then when he ran, case in point, he threw to players short of the sticks on third down, and then when he has the opportunity to scramble, he gets out in the open field, and before he gets to the sticks, he gives himself up with 2-3 yards short. If you're going to scramble on third down, scramble on third down and go for the sticks. What in heaven's name are you doing giving yourself up before the sticks? That's one of those plays where you go, okay, well, I need to keep this drive alive. You have to go for that. And I complained about it last week. When he scrambles, he scrambles like he doesn't know how to run, or he's afraid of any sort of contact. He takes bad angles instead of running towards the first down marker. He'll run of what looks like 15 yards, and it's a 3 yard gain.
Yeah, that's where my biggest criticism or critique is on everybody that's wanting more from Blaine Gabbert or going with the, oh, he could be the quarterback of the future. He's auditioning for the job in 2018. It's like, that's fine if this is a kid in his first or second year that started no games or two or three games. We're talking about a guy that started now 43 NFL games, and he's not thrown a touchdown in 10 of those games, and he's not thrown an interception in only 16 of those games. So,
and only 9 times in his career has he thrown multiple touchdown passes. Only twice have they come in consecutive weeks.
Right, and he's thrown multiple interceptions 13 times in his career. So, I mean, that again, I get everything that's said in his defense. He's been on bad teams. Yes, absolutely, 100%. He has been on horrific teams. that's could probably include this Arizona Cardinals team. But at some point, they have a player has to grow, and it's not that Gabbert's not better than he was when he was with the Jags and was kind of the laughing stock of the league. I mean, there was literally an article written by Football Outsiders that says Blaine Gabbert is the worst quarterback in the last decade. I mean, like worst. And we're Cardinals fans. We've seen Ryan Lindley and John Skelton and, you know, Jeff Blake, and we've seen these guys start football games for the Arizona Cardinals. And so to see
Stoney Case, John Navarre, Stan Gelbaugh. No, those are real people.
Right. And these are starting quarterbacks, starting NFL quarterbacks for the Arizona Cardinals. And there's an article that makes a case that Blaine Gabbert's worse than any of them. And so he's not that. And that's fine. That's where his growth has occurred, is that he's not the worst starting NFL quarterback of the last, or, you know, of the millennia. That's good, because now he's maybe, you know, probably in the bottom, you know, if you ranked quarterbacks, he's probably in that 28 to 32 range if you rank all 32 starters right now, which is fine.
And potentially one of the top backups talent wise. And there's things to be positive about, because you are seeing improvements. You put him in this quarterback centric, quarterback friend. I don't know if it's quarterback friendly, it's quarterback centric, and it does cater to his individual abilities. But after 7 years, if you're expecting him to undo every bad habit of his, that's a stretch.
And that's also a very fair and valid point of maybe he's just so broken that it can't be repaired. And so it's not Blaine's fault. And there is something to that. I mean, we saw that with David Carr with the Houston Texans, who went on to be a nice backup in the NFL for a long time, because they're very intelligent players. They're guys that help out in the quarterback room, and they're guys that can step in and carry a team for a series or half a game. Or in the case of Blaine Gabbert, nobody's going to complain about his start with against the Houston Texans and his start against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Nobody's going to complain about that. But where the complaints are going to start, this game, where the Los Angeles Rams, where he was a clear handicap at times to the team and the offense.
Yeah, he missed throws. He didn't make plays, and then the composure wasn't there late. Like, we saw poor composure against Houston. We saw things started to fall apart in the fourth quarter, but he brought it back. He threw the touchdown. He made those big throws, Carson Palmer style, to bring him down. So good composure. He had no composure in that. He bounced back from the bad start, but then when they kept getting behind it and he had to throw, a lot of those sacks happened late in the game when he wasn't pulling the trigger, and he just didn't look good. He didn't look good back there. He looked scared.
And that's the other thing is this. And when you look at and evaluate quarterbacks, one of the questions you always ask yourself is, you know, are they taking care of the ball? And when you look right now at Blaine Gabbert, the answer is no. In three games, he has five interceptions and a fumble. And he had one fumble that was wiped out because of a defensive holding call. And so when you look at those numbers and you look at the overall turnovers, six turnovers in three games is not where you want to be.
And Drew Stanton, for example, in his starts, if you go back to 2014 when he started several games, he had, I believe it was the third lowest interception percentage in Cardinals history. Now, you look at his interception, I mean, in his mop-up duty and his relief appearances, it's not nearly so good. But in his starts, Drew Stanton is very good about taking care of the football.
And so, and this says, so maybe I'm even wrong. Maybe I'm shorting him one, but this article says that he's lost two fumbles this year. So I can't remember a second one outside of the Calais touchdown. So if anybody remembers that, chime in.
I don't remember another one either.
But that would mean he has seven turnovers to only six touchdowns in three games. Two turnovers a game is, I mean, that's way too many as is. So if we, even if we just wipe it out and just say six, that's just too many. And again, it goes back to how we opened the show. When you are a below average team with a very average defense and a really poor special teams, you can't give the other team more chances. And that is what is happening consistently now for the Arizona Cardinals, is that there are mistakes that are compounded. And then when the other team doesn't make mistakes, and so you go to the Houston game and you know, Tom Savage had two turnovers, but they were able to overcome them because of some bad defense. You know, when you look at the Blake Bortles game, he had two turnovers, and the Cardinals, because they played good enough defense and they had their best game on special teams probably in 3 years, they were able to overcome the two Bortles turnovers and win that game. Now you have two more Bortles turnover, or sorry, Gabbert turnovers, and you have a nice defensive effort, but you have horrific special teams play, and it's too much to ask. And so all of this being said, I don't blame Blaine for any of this. I really don't. He's a backup quarterback. He's doing exactly what you need a backup quarterback to do, is keep you in games. And if nothing else, the Cardinals have been in all three games. They just need somebody else or something else to happen. And right now for the Cardinals, there's just not another unit consistently picking up the slack. And in this case, this week, it was, you know, the special teams that struggled and couldn't overcome a bad day on the offensive side of the ball.
And, you know, we were going to push some other Gabbert talks a little bit later in the show. Let's go ahead and finish this up. Bruce Arians talked about that he was asked to react to a few things after the game. And, you know, there's clearly he's auditioning for next year, whatever that role might be, maybe backup, maybe starter. They might actually try to sign him to a long-term deal during the season, potentially, which they did with Corey Peters, something we didn't talk about yet, but then that happened. It's smart, good move. So he's still auditioning. He's doing things that are positive. And if he's their plan, like if they decide to draft a guy, but they're going to start with Blaine Gabbert to kind of bridge the gap, so to say. Now, Bruce Arians, if he's coaching, the young quarterback's going to have a really good shot at starting. However, it wouldn't be bad to have a guy like Gabbert, especially if he makes some progress over the next few games as well, to be that guy. As long as he's not terrible, he's a guy that you, at least for now, it appears, if you have enough people around him, that he can win. Not quite like Carson Palmer. If you put the right guys in the middle, he'll thrive, but he'll be solid. And, you know, him as a starter. Well, and here's the thing, is to kind of pump the brakes. If Carson Palmer comes back, would there be competition between him and Blaine? HBA's like, no. I mean, there'll be competition, but Carson's coming back as a starter, which makes perfect sense. I mean, if Carson Palmer can be beat out in a quarterback competition for Blaine Gabbert, he needs to retire anyway, right?
Absolutely.
So Blaine Gabbert, it sounds like it, I mean, as I've said since the signing, since the offseason, it looks like he has a future with the team. We'll see what that role ends up being. Probably a backup, probably someone to perhaps bridge the gap to that. Whether Carson comes back next year, he's number two and their rookie's number three for Palmer to play one more year, or he's going to enter the offseason as the starter. And then they were talking about on the radio today. So if you're given a chance, who would you like mentoring that rookie quarterback? Would you rather Blaine Gabbert or would you like have Carson Palmer? Carson, duh.
Well, and the other thing is this, and I wrote about it. So we're recording on our Tuesday night, so you'll see this on Revenge of the Birds on Wednesday, but I wrote about it. The other thing is, I think, again, I want to credit Blaine Gabbert for what he's done, because I don't think it's as bad as it's coming across of what I'm saying. And I think a lot of that has been Byron Leftwich, and I think Leftwich has done a nice job. And so, you know, now the question is, how long can the Cardinals hold on to him for dear life? And maybe he can be a part of that kind of grooming of a young quarterback, because, you know, in numerous articles, we've seen them talk about the importance of Leftwich for Gabbert, but also before Palmer left for Carson Palmer. And when you look at the numbers, they're not great by any means, but when you put it in the big picture, you know, you take out that putrid Detroit game and the quarterbacks are something like 17 touchdowns to only 11 interceptions. And that's, I mean, it's lower than you would like it to be touchdown wise, but I mean, look at the guys who are throwing.
Honestly, outside of that Detroit game, Palmer was really good.
Right.
Outside of five quarters, because he started really hesitant. He started really iffy against Indianapolis. But after that first quarter, until he got hurt, he was actually, like we talked about, he was playing at an incredibly high level, something that he wasn't doing when nothing else was working. And he was doing so while getting hit a ton, which he's never done well in his career.
Right. And so, you know, when it's all said and done, when you look at everything, I think you're comfortable, maybe confidence, not the right word, but you're comfortable with the room as is because of the coaches. Tom Moore's, you know, nice job, Bruce Arians, has shown in his three games with Blaine Gabbert that he's willing to mold the offense more towards what the quarterback is able to do. Now, if that changes as drastically as it did in the Rams game, I reserve the right to remove that statement. But you know, through two games, you were like, wow, this is a really different offense, and BA is doing a nice job of putting the team in a position to win games with, you know, what they have at quarterback. And so that showed me that they have the house to groom a quarterback, whether it's with or without Carson Palmer. They have the house to do that if they so choose. Now the next part is the whole, like, pulling the trigger on it and having it done.
Blaine Gabbert wasn't the only player, obviously, who played. So there's some other things to talk about. What about Kerlin Williams? What about special teams? What about that defense? What about Amos Jones? That's coming up next on Rise Up, See Red. We're back on Rise Up, See Red. We're done talking about Blaine Gabbert for now, but there are some other people to talk about. Kerlin Williams, how impressed were you by him? I did not expect that at all. In fact, I wrote leading up to the game, I believed that DJ Foster would have his big opportunity. And it just felt that way because you had Adrian Peterson in mispractice all week. Kerlin Williams got the bad ribs as a running back, and he's not very big. But what does he do? He comes in, and he's very effective. 97 yards on 16 carries. Really, there were – I can't remember many even negative plays for him. That they were, even the bad plays were 2-3 yards, and then there was the one drive where he was absolutely gashing the Rams defense. I was down on Kerwin after the start of the season because you know, after David Johnson went down, Kerwin didn't show anything. But he's obviously not an elite back, and he's not going to do much when there's not much there. However, if you give him a little something, he's shown he can be very good. He's fast. He is tough. And, I mean, he was, I'd have to say, the bright spot of that game.
I mean, outside of continually getting to watch Larry Fitzgerald play, yeah, I would 100% agree with that. It's one of those things where you sit there and you just, it's a continual marveling at the fact that they can get performances out of guys like a Kerwin Williams, like a JJ Nelson, like a Ricky Seals Jones, and then still not win football games, because you're like, if I told you that Kerwin Williams would run for almost 5 yards of carry and have almost 100 yards of offense.
It was over 6 yards of carry.
Right. So, and then you tag in that Blaine Gabbert is going to throw for over almost 300 yards, and the defense is going to hold the Rams to 25 points. You're like, oh, the Cardinals had a good chance in this game, huh? Not, oh, they got blown out 32-16. And again, it just goes to the kind of Jekyll and Hyde personality of this team, because you get a performance by the offensive line, because I think we need to compliment the offensive line, because we've torn them apart all season, and they deserve to be torn apart in this game for 6 sacks against Blaine Gabbert. But when you look at the running lanes created by the offensive line in this game, Kerwin Williams did a nice job. I'm taking nothing away from Kerwin. And on top of that, he did it with cracked ribs. Like, that's a Herculean effort. But those lanes, like, those were lanes that you and I could have probably gained 1 or 2 yards. Like, that's where we would have picked up positive yardage. Like, we wouldn't have gotten 5 or 6 like Kerwin was getting, but we would have been able to get that yard. And that's how good they were. And one of the things I told you is I watched the Aaron Boone, because he got just completely destroyed by Pro Football Focus today in their grades that they give out. And I went back and I watched all the snaps against when he was up against Aaron Donald. And, man, did he do a really nice job of letting Donald dictate the play on running situations, and then just kind of being that NBA defender and shuffling his feet so he couldn't get to the running back. But man, that does not work in pass protection. And so when you look at it, you know, out of everything, Kerwin Williams doing a nice job, having a productive day running, makes the, like you said, the doubling up of the score even slightly more baffling, because that was one of the keys that you and I have talked about the last couple of weeks, is if you can get a running game going and take some of the pressure off of Blaine Gabbert, that's just going to make him more effective. And it almost seemed to have the opposite effect this week, in where the Rams were like, all right, beat us on the ground. We dare you to beat us on the ground. And the Cardinals were doing a really nice job of it. And then I guess they got so far behind that it had to go back to the passing game.
Yeah, and I continue to be incredibly impressed with Jared Vilder's transition back over to the left side, because when DJ Humphries left, the running game was absolutely atrocious. Move Jared back over to the left side, they're good again on the run game, especially running left. So you've got Vilder and Boone. That's a nice running pair. And it's almost to the level where they're at with DJ playing. Now, on the right side, that means you've got Jen Wentzel over there who is able. He's able, but he's nothing special when it comes to the running game, but he handles himself well. So I've been real impressed, and during the game I was like, why one right? Just run left, because Veldier and Boone were opening gaping holes for them. Now, in part, they adjusted The Arians said that the Rams started taking their tackles like blockers and putting them over a tackle instead of on the interior, and that slowed things down. So instead of getting, you know, 8 or 9 yards, they were just getting 2-3. That's what's to happen after that one huge drive that Kerwin had.
And when you look at it, that's one of the things that you and I have talked about the last, I think it's kind of been highlighted the last couple of weeks. And that is, I don't want to say the inability, because I don't think it's an inability, but it's the fact that the Cardinals in second half of a lot of games seem to get outcoached. And we talked about it in the Jags win. The Cardinals were up 16-3. It's not like they were, or, you know, it's not like they were skating by. Like, they were up 16-3 and had to kick a last second field goal after a completely boneheaded coaching decision. Like, it just is really odd how in several games this season, they've been what seems to be, from the lay person that is you and I, they seem to be being out-schemed in the second half of games. And you see a team like the Rams make an adjustment, like putting Brockers on the outside, and then you say, okay, we probably aren't going to be able to run that tackle power, that inside zone, but now can we get outside, because Veldheer's a little more athletic than Brockers. He's going to be able to get the edge, right? And maybe we can run off tackle a little bit now instead of inside. And you know, that didn't happen. But again, I think it didn't happen because I think Arians kind of got antsy. We've seen him do this before too, where he's like, oh man, we're down by 10. All right, time to throw the ball. Screw it. So
even though the success they were having, he probably should stick with it. And when you've got a banged up Kerwin Williams, it's easy to go, okay, we've gotten this much from him. How much more is there? Well, with an Adrian Peterson, you can give the ball 37 times and get 37 carries. And then you can do that because he's a star. But with a Kerwin Williams with bad ribs, you're like, if I go to the well one too many times, he's going to cough up the football, and that ends that. And so, yeah, let's throw the ball because he believes in the passing game.
Exactly. And he trusts, again, like it or not, with Bruce Arians, he believes in whoever's out there at quarterback. Whether it's Drew Stanton, Carson Palmer, or Blaine Gabbert, he has the same belief in all of them. And so, while you and I just can sit there and go, well, we know that Drew Stanton and Blaine Gabbert aren't as good as Carson Palmer, Bruce Arians clearly doesn't think that. He thinks that I can win with this guy. And so,
yeah,
you know what? Players respond to that, and they appreciate that. They appreciate somebody believing in them. So, you know, you and I are just going to have to deal with it, even if we don't agree with it.
And I do like it. I do like the fact that, although in part what it ends up doing, it does say, hey, if it doesn't work, it's because the player's not good enough. And he lives with that. Special teams was bad, and so fans again are calling for Amos Jones. Fans don't count on it. Yes, the Justin Drescher, the long snapper, got killed, absolutely destroyed twice, leading to two block kicks. They gave up a 30-yard punt return, and Arian said, you know, in terms of football, you can't chase your own colors. You can't run after your own colors. They had young players in the punt coverage team that were not in their right lanes to contain, and Farrell Cooper was able to take advantage of that. They gave, you know, this was more just dumb luck. Andy Lee's 60-yard punt, 6 inches less, and it goes out of bounds at the one, taps the pylon as it goes out of bounds, and so it ends up being a touchback. they get nothing in the return game, but they never do. They never get anything in the return game. And so people are talking about, hey, why is Amos Jones still have a job? Bruce Arians comes out and doubles down as he does. He's talking to Bickley and Murata. He said, well, let's look at it. So snappers snap the ball. Is that coaching? Kickers kick the ball. Kickers miss. Is that coaching? And he pointed to the, you know, it's one thing. You see the preparation. You see the coaching in practice. You things that they're taught, don't do this, and do this. And then on the field, it's different. So is that the talent or is that the coaches? And he said, I think that's the talent. And you'd like to replace them, but you can't. And then the injuries come into fact, the fact that you've got guys playing roles who ideally wouldn't be playing them because players ahead of them have gotten hurt, or players ahead of them who should be playing special teams are playing significantly more in other parts of the game, like a Kareem Martin, who's now playing 50 snaps a game. And so for me, and I think, what would firing Amos Jones do? What really would it do anything? Would it make suddenly Justin Drescher a good long snapper? Would it make their coverage team good? Would it make Phil Dawson make kicks when he's been missing them? And I don't think so, unless you look at schematically. Now, you have another take on this in dealing with ultimately whether the player fails or the scheme fails, the coach is actually where it still fails.
Right. And at some point, if you're continuing to fail on special teams, and you're saying, well, the scheme's fine. The players aren't doing whatever they're supposed to do. And I think that's fair and accurate. Then my question is, who's evaluating the players and choosing them? And because you brought up a nice point of, you know, they're without Aaron Brewer. They're without, Kareem Martin is not playing as much special teams. Just key players that they've trusted. But here's my question then. Who chose the guys last year? Who chose the guys at the beginning of this year when special teams were still bad? Like, and if you're telling me that Steve Keim is choosing all these guys, that he's the one and that, you know, that the coaches are just stuck with them and, well, then maybe Steve Keim needs to be fired. I don't know, but like, you can't continue to fail in the same way over and over and say, well, it's somebody else, because at some point it is your fault because you're either making the decisions and making the calls or you're choosing the people that will. And so when you look at it from this point of view, you know, he's the one putting those guys out there. And if they're not good enough to do the job, then find somebody that is. And if that's not going to work, then you got to figure it out. But at this point, I wouldn't say it cost them a game because it wasn't close enough to cost them a game, but it definitely played a role in them losing that game.
Absolutely. And it's not to the level that they were a year ago where you had a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense, but you had the worst special teams unit in football that cost them somewhere between 3 and 5 games, where you can arguably say that was definitely a thing. Basically, their special teams last year cost them the postseason. This year, it's just been the offense is bad, the defense is not good, and the special teams has been inconsistent. You look at the defense and how they played. They really, in the running game, did a good job, except for a couple plays against Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley beat him in the passing game. He still ended up with 158 all-purpose yards from scrimmage. Sammy Watkins was held in cat. You know, Sammy Watkins was limited. Cooper Kupp wasn't. I mean, Cooper Kupp was trouble in with Tyrann Mathieu. But that defensively, they did some good things. They limited that offense to just over 300 yards. They kept them to under 100 yards rushing. They limited the Rams to 3 of 11 on third down. So it's 27% on third down. And the red zone efficiency, they were only 50%. And so you look at that, and was the defense bad? No, but was it good? Clearly no, because they gave up 25 points.
Well, and it goes back to what we talked about earlier is, was it good? Yes. But it wasn't good enough. So, you know, you're exactly right. Was it good? Probably. I mean, they still give up way too many big plays. Like, when you watch the Cardinals versus any team, it always seems like the Cardinals, right, are the ones that are giving up the big play, and then lately not getting the big play, and that just continually kind of rears its head. And even in this game, you had the extremely athletic play out of Kareem Martin to make that interception on that Jared Goff pass. You set your team up in a really nice kind of short field position, and then did they get three out of that, or did they get nothing? I can't even remember at this point. But it's one of those where you you have to get seven there. Like, you're going
up. No, they got this. They did. No. That was the pick six.
Oh, that's right.
They got the pick six.
So then, yeah, you
nothing. They got negative 7 points out of that.
You compound it by then, yeah, making an even worse play. So when you talk about it, like, you see this in youth sports, and I know these guys are paid, and I know these guys are proud of the work they do, but at some point too, you get frustrated. And we've seen that frustration come out in a number of ways. For instance, I tweeted out a couple weeks ago when they were playing the Texans, and they were clearly in zone coverage because DeAndre Hopkins motioned across the field and Patrick Peterson literally threw his hands up and kind of like stood there. Stood there with his hands on his hips, and you're like,
he's like, stupid. He's on the other side of the field.
Right. And it's like, these guys are irritated. And I'm not blaming James Betcher for this. Like, I'm not saying that it fire Betcher or anything like that, but it's clearly starting to affect the players mentally. So you get that huge play. You're down in the game. It's early, but you're down in the game, and then you need your defense to make a play. You need your defense to do something. And they come up with that big interception, a great play, and then you immediately give it all back and more. And then all of a sudden, the defense goes, well, like, does it matter what I do at this point? And they still played hard, and they still did a nice job for – you know, the rest of the game. I think they ended up giving up, you know, 16 more points after that. But again, one of them was on that short field after a series of, you know, a nice stop on defense inside the Rams 10, a 70-yard punt, a sack, two negative plays, and then a punt of the Cardinals, and then a 30-yard return for Farrell Cooper. And the Rams are in chip shot field goal range for Greg Zuerlein, and you go, what just happened? And for the defense, you go, what just happened? Like, we just had them stopped inside their own 10, and now we have to defend at our own 30? And all that happened was our offense had the ball for three plays. Like, nothing else happened. There was no turnover. There was nothing. I mean, it was just three plays, and the Rams have the ball, and they're at their own 30. They literally got a 70-yard difference in plays, or 60-yard difference in three plays without doing anything on offense. And the Cardinals, I mean, honestly, on offense, not making a mistake. Yeah, they gave up a sack, but they didn't turn the ball over. So it's you know, situations like that, your offense isn't producing, your special teams is continually putting you in a bad position, and all of a sudden, you know, you're expected to win games. And let's be honest, you're overmatched. I mean, you're without Marcus Golden. Daniel Buchanan's out again. Tremont Williams hasn't been bad, but he hasn't exactly been good. So you have the Defensive Player of the Year candidate, and I'm going to just start championing this in Chandler Jones. And then you have the always great Patrick Peterson. And then you have Buda Baker, who had a rough outing. Tyrann Mathieu wasn't terrible, but you know, you're not getting consistency from anywhere else. You're getting consistency from two players, and then you're getting, you know, plays or series of good play from other guys, but nothing consistent enough to sustain that success on defense.
And that's where we're at. The Cardinals are now 5-7. They are all but done in the playoff race. There's still a chance. The Cardinals believe in that chance. And now they play the Titans this week. Coming up after Rise Up, See Red, how much of a chance do they have? That's coming up next on Rise Up, See Red. We're back on Rise Up, See Red and playoff chances. The Cardinals are 5-7. They are now 3 games back of the number 6 seed with 4 games to go. It's possible and not very likely. Nonetheless, they're still talking like they have a chance and they're mostly control their own destiny. What percent chance do you give them that they make the postseason at this point?
I would say 0, just because everybody else in front of them is getting something back sooner than they are. You look at the Green Bay Packers, they've stayed afloat. They're at 6-6. Yeah, it's just one game better than the Cardinals, but they're at 6-6, and they get the Cleveland Browns this week. So that's, I mean, you got to feel good about that. Oh, and then the next week they could, with the last 3 games, they could have Aaron Rodgers back. So am I going to go with the Cardinals against the Titans, Redskins, and Seahawks and Blaine Gabbert, or am I going to go with the Packers and the Browns and then possibly getting Aaron Rodgers back? In the same way, you have the Seahawks and Rams who, yes, they have to play each other again, but they're so far out of the NFC West at this point. I mean, they're 3 games back of the Seahawks for 2nd place. So they're virtually done in the NFC West.
And I mean, I'm not going to give them a 0% chance. I'm going to give them a 3.3%. Almost none. Almost none. Almost none. You know, it is true that in years past, 9-7, 8-8 has gotten teams in the playoffs. But they've had to leapfrog so many teams to do it. Could they do it? No. Can they do it? No. Might they do it? And it's possible. They do have winnable games left on the schedule. They could beat the Titans.
Oh,
they
absolutely.
They could beat the Redskins. They can beat the Giants.
I mean, you and I talked about it off the air, and we'll talk about it in a second, but I fully expect them to win one of the next 2 games and all of us to kind of scratch our heads again.
You and I believe this is a 7-win team, and it looks like they're on track for 7 wins. Now, if Carson Palmer somehow comes back at the end of the year, you know, Carson as a Cardinal has never lost in Seattle. And how fun would it be to knock the Seahawks out of the playoffs?
And play spoiler, that would, I mean, like you said, that would be something that's enjoyable to watch.
3.3, basically 1/33rd, not 1/3, but 1/33rd possibility. So I'm giving a 3.3% chance. Now let's look at the Titans. The Titans are quite the anomaly. They are 8-4 and sit atop the AFC South. Jacksonville also 8-4. It looks like right now Tennessee would get the tie break ahead right now. However, they're interesting. They are very good in the running game. They're very good against the run, but they have been outscored. So the negative point differential, they have negative turnover ratio. They've given up more yards than they've gained. Marcus Mariota has turned the ball over more than he has thrown touchdowns. is this team good? I'm not sure. 8-4 says at the top of the AFC South says they should be good, that they're at least decent, but the metrics make it look like they're not.
And you know, they're coming to Arizona, which is a difference. They struggled against Houston for a lot of the game last week. I think it was 2 weeks ago they lost a game that they should have won. And so, yeah, you when you look at this team, I think part of it is they haven't leaned enough on Derrick Henry. He really took over that game against the Texans last week. He looked incredible. But if we know anything about the Cardinals, it's that for whatever reason, they get really gassed up to face good running backs. You know, you even mentioned it earlier. They did a nice job against Todd Gurley on the ground. It was Todd Gurley, the receiver, that ate him alive. And that's not Derrick Henry's game, and that's not Tennessee's offense with Derrick Henry. So the question becomes, can the defense make enough plays, as we continue to say, to keep the offense in the game and allow Blaine Gabbert to kind of feel his way through the game? And with the way that the high and low that we've seen from Tennessee this year, if you watch a Tennessee game, there are legitimate times during the game that I ask the same question that you just asked: are they good? And you'll watch them go, wow, that was really impressive. And then two quarters later, you're like, why am I watching this game? And is this team any good? Like, you don't know. And so I know that's kind of a non-answer to the question, but that's the reality. They're 8-4, like you said. They get a bad Cardinals team now. So maybe they are 9-4 after this weekend. And I'm not going to say that they're good, quite frankly. Like, unless they come in and put up a really good performance on the Cardinals that they haven't done outside of the one game in Jacksonville, and I think that was in week two of the season, I'm just not going to buy them that they're a good team at this point. But again, I think it all comes down to what the Cardinals can do offensively to kind of maintain pace, and then defensively, can they make enough plays? Can they get enough big stops in important positions to allow the offense some leeway? Because we know that the offense isn't going to be great. I mean, it's not. So can they do enough to make the offense kind of negligible at this point?
And when you look at the weapons that they use in the passing game, you know, their top receiver is Delanie Walker, which will make you, okay, there is the potential to be trouble because Tennessee can run the ball really well. Now, the Cardinals have played running backs quite well overall, but you've got two backs that you've got to stop between DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry. If you can keep them to third and manageable, to third and not short, then you got to worry about the middle of the field. I mean, Delanie Walker, middle of the field, tight end. Cardinals like to give up catches in the middle of the field. They've been really good. They've been really good, again, defending the pass down the field. We will say that. It's running backs and tight ends and slot receivers underneath that kill them. And that could be potentially problematic.
It could. And, you know, they haven't gotten anything out of first-round pick Corey Davis, who Cardinals fans really like coming out. You know, they haven't gotten much out of Taywan Taylor, their third-round pick, who I really liked coming out. So when you talk about them, like you said, their team as a whole doesn't really makes sense, but they do run the ball extremely well. Derrick Henry, 629 yards, averaging 5 yards per carry. That's really, really solid. You know, when you look at Eric Decker, he's a nice slot receiver. Could he give the Cardinals problems this week? That is something that I think you have to be concerned about, as you kind of just brought up. Are they built to stop Eric Decker? That, like, a couple weeks ago you wouldn't have worried about that, but I don't know. The one name to remember, and this is kind of my, you know, if if you do daily fantasy or whatever, I'm sure nobody's going to pick him up in your regular fantasy league. But a guy that has had a couple nice games and can be used kind of opposite Delanie Walker is Jonnu Smith. And he's a rookie tight end, H-back wide receiver that they – he scored 2 touchdowns on the year. That's more touchdowns than Corey Davis and Taywan Taylor combined on the season. So they don't give him the ball a ton, but when he does get the ball, it's usually in situations to score touchdowns. So that's the name that I'm worried about. Cause when you look at the team, like you said, you feel good about Rishard Matthews. Delanie Walker is going to get his because the Cardinals just are not great stopping tight ends still. Eric Decker's been really average this year. So you feel confident in stopping all of that. So it's going to come from either the inability to stop Derrick Henry, or it's going to come from somewhere else. And the one name to remember, like I said, is Jonnu Smith. He's a guy that could end up causing some problems this game for the Cardinals. So, when you look at it, I think, you kind of hit it on the head. Defensively, they're great against the run. I mean, downright great. They're not great against the pass, and I do mean that wholeheartedly. They're not. So that doesn't necessarily give you the warm and fuzzies if you're a Cardinals fan, right? Like, all right, this is a game that they need Blaine Gabbert to kind of win for them. And that's one of those situations where, what happens is going to kind of define our conversation next week, probably, right? Because if they again struggle to perform offensively, and it's because of Blaine Gabbert, and he was expected to carry him in this game, then I think we continue to have our answer on him. But if maybe he answers the bell this week, maybe he's able to do a little more and we see a little more. So it's a game I'm actually looking forward to because I want to see the Cardinals against a team that I honestly don't think is that good. And I think that they are good enough to win. Does that mean they will win? I have no idea, but they're good enough to beat them.
Yes. And we know that the AFC South isn't fantastically good. Jacksonville was very good defensively as a team. The Cardinals were able to move the ball. Tennessee, great against the run, but not great defensively. And they're not great offensively. So it's the perfect opportunity for the Cardinals to get win number 6 and then, of course, put themselves into a position to win one more game. And there you go. And so that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. As always, you can find us all over the internet. You find us on social media, on Facebook, on Twitter. It's Rise Up Sea Red. It's featured on revengeofthebirds.com, also on cardswire.com. You can also find it on Blog Talk Radio, Audio Boom, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Spreaker.com, and on Amazon's Alexa. If you're the Apple users, download the podcast, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And if you do subscribe, give us a nice rating. We'd love that. On behalf of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Roots. We will be back next week, hopefully talking about a Cardinals win. If not, we will eulogize this season as we've slowly done all year. We'll talk to you guys next week. Go Cardinals, Rise Up Sea Red.